But I cannot tell you, nor can anyone else tell you, how long it's going to last. It may last a few years. If the Lord wants to do a real deep work, it will last a few years. But it doesn't mean it's going to be day in, day out, strong, intense dryness. The Lord knows how to let up, then back again into purification, then let up, and so on. He's not a tormentor. I think the best way to put that right off is that idea. What are you doing to me, Lord? Are you tormenting me? No way. St. John of the Cross puts it in the context of love. It's God's love that's doing it. See, what he's doing, first of all, in that baptism of the Spirit, we experience his love in our feelings. He had to reach us on that level. Otherwise, we would say, well, God doesn't really care for me. But that's the lowest level. That's on a sense level. That's the level we share with animals. Animals feel hurt. But God is a spirit, a pure spirit. So what he wants to do is raise us to his level. Now, after he's appealed to us in our sense level, then he comes to the spirit. This is what he's doing now. So it's his love now that's doing the purifying. Our spirit is responding, but the sense part of it is saying, no way, I'm starving down there. Hey, up there, how about it? But the Lord is purifying our feelings through that dryness, detaching us from the selfishness. So it's the spirit part of us is being fed now. In the early stage, it's like just an appetizer, and that's not enough. But it's such a different state that we have not adjusted to it. And we don't see it as God's love. But it is his love that's purifying. It's a fire. So what does the fire do? It burns, chars, consumes. So remember that it's his love. And as we become more sensitive to it, then that love will burst up. And then we'll become more aware of it. So these other difficulties now, they're not essential to the dark night of the sense, and may never occur to some people. And some of them are more likely to occur in the dark night of the spirit. It's another purification that will follow if God wants to bring them to this higher stage. If they do occur, St. John of the Cross says that some of these storms, trials, happen now because God intends to lead such a person into the second purification. But a better view of this may be the thought expressed earlier by our St. John of the Cross, namely that there is only one night, but it has various parts. In fact, that's what he says. In the beginning of the evening, you have, what do they call that?
Twilight.
See, that's a preparation. That's the early signs of this dryness. And then you really move into it, it gets darker. So we're in the early stage of the twilight, moving into greater darkness. But at midnight, pitch black. That's the second purification. See? Now, as you approach the hours of the morning, you come into dawn. And that's what happens. In their spiritual life, there are signs. The Lord is saying, it's almost over now. And they have signs that something beautiful, wonderful has happened. But they're not able to appreciate it yet, because he doesn't want to reveal until it's all done. So it's all one night, but there are different stages. The division into two nights is based on two kinds of purification needed. But this does not demand that all of the first night must be completed before the second can begin. In all this, we must not limit or restrict the freedom and wisdom of God, who purifies us in the way he sees is needed and according to his plan for us. We can't accelerate it. We can't say, come on, Lord, get done with it. I want this over in 1 month. That's dictating. That's telling the Lord what to do. That's pride. You get no response from the Lord. In fact, he might stop the work right there and said, if my work hasn't humbled you, if I haven't taken out of you your pride, then I haven't succeeded. We'll stop right here. The dark night of the senses is a deep purification of man in his sense nature. Our feeling part of us, our imagination, which is part of our sense life, our sense judgment, sense memory, and so our feelings and so on, taste, touch, smell, and so on, emotions. Though the person is already cleansed from gross moral evils connected with sensuality, still this nature has deep roots. One of these deep roots is a tendency to depend more on the emotions than is necessary. It is a mistake to try to suppress the emotions entirely, but the process of dulling the emotions gives our spirit a chance to emerge and grow. Now there is a natural dependence on the emotions, and the matter of having to live without feeling will be painful, will cause a person to have fear, uncertainty. This fear, uncertainty, can be the cause of certain temptations that are part of this night of the senses. One, faith. One of these temptations is that of faith. Before this, our faith had about it a certain fullness and a feeling of security which satisfied the spiritual and emotional part of us. Now, with the emotional part of us downed, we do not experience faith or hope or love in the same satisfying way. So we must become fearful or inclined to think that our faith or hope or love are gone. Again, wrong. See? Bad judgment. The feelings are not there. It doesn't mean faith isn't there. It's all up here in the will to believe, the act of faith, whether you feel it or not, and the act of love. You may say very dryly, but it is an act of love because it's in the will, not in the feelings. Without realizing it, that person's faith is growing because they now believe the truths of faith because God has said these things, rather than because it is consoling to believe them. So too their hope grows because their hope or trust is based on what the Lord has promised and love because of what the Lord is, rather than because of their feelings about Him. All this is on a far higher level and degree than before. Love for neighbor is also purified because there is a deeper insight into the relationship of this love of God, and because this love now rests more on real spiritual values than on what appeals to us about a person. Then too, humility is deepened, grows, because we now see our own defects, become more appreciative of the good we see in others, we're more willing to overlook their faults because we're deeply aware of our own. One effect of the withdrawal of the emotion of consolation is resentment. It is involuntary, and it is important not to forget this. It's not willed. Resentment, rebellion, even blasphemy against God may burst out of the person. There is no guilt in such thoughts, even though they may arise with much violence. We see this as an effect from the death of self-will that will happen in the dark night of the spirit. But when it occurs in the dark night of the sense, it is a reaction against the withdrawal of so much that made the things of God so sweet and delightful. And the feeling side of us, the emotional side, feels that it has been deceived or cheated into trading something precious for just dry dust. Because they are in a temporarily insecure state that was once familiar weaknesses may come back, and the lack of joy will bring out others. For example, the reappearance or the first appearance of scrupulosity, seeing sin where there is no sin. This frame of mind will deepen the darkness, but there will be a process of growth under such trials. trust in God for help, belief in God's love will be deepened. And we must never forget that God's grace for the final victory is never wanting. He's there. Again, a person may not know it, but it's like you mothers training your little baby to walk. Remember the time? Here it was, wobbly, rubbery feet, you know, but getting up there and heaving along. But your hands was behind, more than one sense behind. And if the baby should fall backward, it would fall right into your hands. Okay? That's the way it is in the dark night. The Lord's hands are right there, but you don't feel it. If you were to fall seriously, it would be right there. But you have no sense of that. See? Now, temptations also against chastity are more severe now. After successfully overcoming them in previous years, there's now a return. Despite one's essential goodness, or our nature, our sexual nature is like a deposed tyrant that waits to return at a time when we are spiritually, psychologically, or emotionally weak. From past experience with periods of depression, it is in these moments that we are in greatest danger. So, in the dark night of the senses, we are in this kind of situation, where the consoling side of our emotions is not with us. Yet there is an unconscious desire for the fulfillment of our lost feelings, while at the same time, we are insecure in the darkness, don't know where we're going. Now for all we are, now within us is a strong desire or strong source of emotional fullness which promises to make up for all we are missing and will do this with an overwhelming personal involvement and fulfillment. So we see the return of an undisciplined sexuality which can be very violent, like the return of seven devils instead of the one, as our Lord mentions in the parables, Matthew 12, 43 and 5. For example, thoughts of a sexual kind, images that are at times very vivid, sexual feelings that might be quite strong, will occur in spite, note of the words, in spite of a person's goodwill, and will have to be resisted. They don't want it. They're quite up in the spiritual life, so they've dealt with that. They know what's happening, they don't want it. But it's there, see? It's there. It's a temptation. Again, remember, a temptation is not a sin. It's an invitation to evil. So you can take it or leave it. And this person is very much aware of it. In all this, this person is faithful and reaffirms his surrender to the Lord. And of course, this deepens the virtue of chastity and also of unselfish love for the Lord. Without knowing it, that person is at times practicing heroic virtue and is growing without knowing it. And then the devil. Somebody asked about that today. The devil will at times come in force in many ways to torment the soul at prayer, at Mass, during communion time, during the day with doubts, negative thoughts to discourage the person, impure images, feelings of resentment, complaint against God, irritability and impatience. Did I leave anything else out? The difficulty in the dark night is not of combating some temptations, but in being invited to accept the weak, tasteless spirituality that is now given to the soul, and to reject the delightful, joyful, immediate experience of sexual indulgence. It is no wonder that a person may easily come to think that he is slipping backward, is an evil person, is now rejected by God. And then some external trials. And remember, we're saying, not all this will happen to any one person. Some of it. Now, for example, St. Teresa Little Flower, never, on her own word, had temptations against chastity. She also says she never committed a mortal sin. Now, some of the external trials. A physical illness, trials from friends, temporal losses or misfortunes, so on. These may happen and may not. So don't say, well, if all this is going to happen, I think I'll wait till till the last day. But these will be particularized as the Lord sees it is needed, or they may not be needed, and so we must not go into too great detail, lest we become discouraged by imagining what will never happen to us. Even many of the trials of which we have just spoken will never happen to one person, because not all need the same kind of purification. Those who have lived relatively innocent lives may find that they pass through the night of the senses with relatively little difficulty. But at this time, we must not draw back from generously serving, loving the Lord, out of fear of these trials. That fear should not keep us from going on. In actual fact, even the children of the world undergo greater trials, sometimes more than those we endure. And they do not have the help of God as we do. Think of that. You read the newspapers. I was reading the Reader's Digest for, I think, this month about a Vietnamese prisoner, he's a pilot, caught in North Vietnam. And he was put in isolation for I don't know how many months, brainwashed. He traveled through 7 countries, constantly captured, constantly put in jail, all to find freedom. And the trials he went through, if a Christian did that, I would say he'd be a saint. And this man did all that for freedom. It's heroic. So, about those trials, the best thing is to follow the Lord's advice. Sufficient for the day are the concerns thereof. Don't carry burdens that the Lord doesn't want you to carry. All He wants for you to be concerned about is today, not tomorrow, not the past. There's a good expression about that, a beautiful, what we would call, word of wisdom. Leave the past to God's mercy. Leave the future to His providence. Give the present moment to His love. And you got it. That's it. Past to His mercy, future to His providence, present to His love. Mercy, providence, love. Now, some of the benefits, and you'll say, after all that, there are benefits? Well, it's like the surgeon, you know, he says, now, it's going to hurt, ouch, you know, but he's cut away a bad tumor. So that's what the Lord is doing. He's excising the tumors. Now, as was mentioned, the Lord transfers the communications of His goods. In other words, the spiritual blessings He's giving us to our sense life, He's now transferring that to the spirit, from the senses to our spirit. It is called the food of the strong, namely, infused contemplation amid dryness and darkness in the senses. The first benefit is caused by the dark and dry contemplation, namely, a humbling knowledge of ourself and one's own weaknesses and misery. All the favors God gives the soul now are wrapped up in this kind of self-knowledge, along with the dryness and emptiness experienced by the faculties of the imagination, intellect, lack of feelings, plus difficulty in practicing the virtues. Before this, the person in this night did not have such knowledge. They were pretty full of themselves. If you look back in your own life and early life, you'll see that in the graces of God, there was a lot of self-love, boasting, maybe not to anyone else, but to yourself. And maybe suddenly you were looking in the mirror and saying, gee, where are the wings now? Boy. Or looking for that halo. Maybe the Lord showed you a few horns instead.
Say, wait, I got to cut the horns off. The insights that now come to such a person are more authentic and trustworthy. Our saint writes, the soul considers itself to be nothing, finds no satisfaction in self because it is aware that of itself it neither does nor can do anything. God is giving it a deep realization of what he said, Jesus, in the Gospels. Without me, you can do nothing. Before this time, the former good deeds that were performed with great satisfaction, great as they might have been, do not please God as much as the soul's present lack of self-esteem and dissatisfaction about its serving God so poorly. All those former good works were performed with many imperfections, selfishness, much ignorance. As a result of this dryness, many other benefits are realized because they come from the healthy self-knowledge that is now given. First, in its communication with God, the soul now approaches God with more respect and courtesy. Before this, there was a want of this, a kind of courtesy and consideration, and a familiarity that with God was not proper at this time. Second, God grants another kind of enlightenment, namely, the knowledge of his grandeur and majesty. With the emptiness, detachment, experience in the senses, appetites, desires, our understanding is left in such purity and freedom that it grasps revealed truths in great depth, which a person does not notice when the fog of desires, appetites, feelings cloud the intellect. On the other hand, our Carmelite says, anguish and dryness of the senses illumines, quickens the intellect. Also in the darkness and dryness of contemplation, God supernaturally teaches the detached soul about his divine wisdom without hindrance, which he did not do in the days of the beginner stage of the sense satisfactions and delights. So you can see the wisdom of God in what he's doing. So it becomes apparent that self-knowledge is the first result of this dry night of sense, and from this knowledge comes the knowledge of God. St. Augustine, let me know myself, Lord, and I will know you. Because philosophy tells us one extreme is clearly known by the other. It's like, for example, when you're in darkness, you know what light is. One extreme known knows the other. The knowledge of self and of God given in this night, while it is very helpful, is nevertheless not as abundant as it will be in the second purification. But the knowledge now given is the foundation for that which will be given in the night of the Spirit. And then spiritual humility, acquired by this self-knowledge, counteracts the effects of the first capital sin of spiritual pride. Person is now purified of all these imperfections of pride that were so obvious in the beginner stage. Now deeply aware of their own poverty, weakness, faults, sins, spiritual person does not dare consider himself more advanced than others. Such a thought does not even cross his mind. On the contrary, now this privileged soul realizes that others are better because they don't know themselves as they know themselves. So they cannot pass judgment on anyone but themselves. You do not know yourself. You do not know others like you know yourself. So you cannot consider yourself better than them. Because knowing our own faults, we cannot impose these faults on others. We don't know them. From this blessed humility comes love of neighbor. Because this person now has a real esteem for his neighbor. There's no question of judging his neighbor, which he did so freely, when in the state of fervor, he considered himself better than others. That happens to everybody. They pray better. They're praying fervently. They're looking over at Mrs. Smith and they're saying, oh boy, look at her. She's still in the novena stage. And so on, you know. And another blessing is that the spiritual person is more willing to be submissive and obedient to those in authority. They listen willingly to instruction from others, even want to be directed and told what to do, no matter who it may be that gives the information. We now notice that presumption on one's own strength, one's own knowledge, ability, is gone. So we see the other imperfections of spiritual pride being removed as one journeys into this night of sense. And then the Lord deals also with what we call the seven capital sins: pride, covetousness, lust, gluttony, anger, envy, and sloth. The vice of avarice is also dealt with. Many imperfections that grew out of the spiritual person's unrestrained desires for spiritual things, seeking sense feelings, gratification in a selfish way in one's prayers and spiritual exercises, all these are purified because of the dryness felt in these same exercises and the want of satisfaction in them. They perform these exercises now with great moderation, so much so that there may be a danger of not performing them with any zeal at all. But God usually grants souls in this state the humility and willingness to perform all their duties for love of Him alone. Without knowing it, that soul becomes detached from many things simply through this constant dryness, but they don't know it, until one day suddenly they say, "Gee, I can take it or leave it. Doesn't mean a thing." Whereas maybe a few months before they say, "Never, never could I give that up." Strangely, a thing like spiritual lust, due to the constant dryness of the senses, dislike to perform spiritual exercises, but they're faithful though. This person is freed from the imperfections. Notice we say not sins, imperfections, that were mentioned earlier about feelings of lust. These feelings, we said, ordinarily come from the pleasure the senses take in the delights given to the spirit. I think I went into that some time ago. I may bear some repeating just to clarify this statement. In the spiritual life, body and soul are very closely united together. Now, when God grants something to our spirit that is joyful, then the body shares in it too. And especially too if we experience God's love. Now, the body knows only one way to respond to love in a healing way, and that is the sexual part of our nature. So because of that, there may be sexual feelings out of something good, but it's what you might call it an unintended object. See? And the person at this stage is very much aware of that. There's no question of sin. It's just our imperfect nature responding in the wrong way. And so there's no sin. St. John the Cross says, you don't have to worry. If God is blessing you and you have these spiritual feelings, they're joyful, loving, and so on. But if the body responds in its way, just disregard it. There's no question of consent. It's just bypassing it, okay? And that's what he's talking about here. God now restrains the desires and appetites of a person in this dry and dark night that he is unable to find any sense and light in any things of earth or of heaven. This is continued until these desires and appetites are brought into submission, restrained and reformed. As a result, the passions lose their strength and vitality because they are unfulfilled. Once this is accomplished, admirable blessings follow. The spirit now dwells in what may be called spiritual peace and tranquility. Here the spiritual person enjoys God's peace and consolation. I should say, I don't want to leave you in doubt that this person is just a piece of wood now. They have no feelings, and that the sexual part of their nature is dead. No, they're human. And if they're married, there is a normal married life. But there is such control that they've never had before. Okay? So with all the other emotions, like anger, for example, resentment, rebellion, and fears and so forth, we can be more joyful than we need to, like silly. People just let go. There's all that kind of moderation and control. And when they're finally purified, and I've said this before, and you got a kick out of it. They're so under control that when you pinch any one of us, we'd say, ouch. But if you pinch them, the first reaction would be, praise the Lord. Now, a second benefit. From the above blessing, there follows a constant remembrance of God, accompanied by a fear and great concern that one might turn back on this spiritual journey. This is a great blessing. Before this, this particular person had no such concern because of the dullness, blindness induced by many attachments, appetites, and desires. Just look at our media. What do they appeal to? Your sense life. Another benefit. In this night, the soul practices all the virtues together. For example, patience and perseverance in spite of the dryness and emptiness in the senses. Faithful to one's spiritual exercises with an unselfish love of God, because there's no longer any personal satisfaction in these good works. The virtual fortitude, the courage and strength. I'm quickly looking. The courage and strength that they need at this time to continue. But that courage and strength is present in a hidden way. Through the very weakness the soul experiences in its dislike for good works. But it goes on. Remember the words of St. Paul, when I am weak, then I am strong. Now they're not relying on their own strength. They're relying on the Lord's strength. Our saint adds, finally, in these drynesses, the soul practices corporally and spiritually all the virtues, theological, faith, hope, and love, cardinal virtues, prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance, and all the associated virtues under each one of them, like religion, chastity, abstinence, poverty, religion, I mentioned that, and a number of other virtues, humility, four cardinal virtues, it means a hinge, cardo cardinus. And so on each of those hinges you have a number of subordinate virtues. Now four other benefits from the night of the sense. The pleasure of peace. Second, the habitual remembrance of God and a constant concern about Him. Third, a sense of cleanness and purity of soul. Fourth, the practice of virtue. And then the vice of anger. In the night of sense, the soul is softened, humbled by the constant dryness, temptations, trials that God permits. In consequence, there is evident meekness, gentleness, toward God, oneself, and one's neighbor. We seldom see this person become impatient and angry with himself over their faults or with their brothers and sisters in the Lord. Nor do we see that peevishness and discourteous attitude toward God because He has not made him perfect in 7 days. Envy. When this spiritual person observes the goodness, virtues of others, he's not grief-stricken and distressed because they are better and more advanced. Rather, he's charitable toward them. If there's any envy, it's a holy envy, namely that he wants to imitate the good he sees in others, and this is a sign of solid virtue. Sloth, the weariness a person experiences in the spiritual exercises is not the vice of sloth. What sloth was really, when it was present, before this time, was due to the spiritual satisfaction he enjoyed or sought to enjoy when it was not present. So the weariness now experienced does not come from the sense satisfaction present in the beginner stage, because God now removes all sense satisfaction from the person as He purifies the appetites. Innumerable other benefits besides what we've mentioned come from this dry contemplation. God knows how to temper the times of dryness and the trial with frequent communications to the soul when it least expects it. At times he bestows spiritual sweetness and a very pure love and spiritual knowledge that is very delicate. These blessings are of more worth than all that the soul desired before this time. But in the beginning of this night, that person will not think so, because his spiritual communications are very subtle and not apparent to the senses. Finally, freed of attachment to sense affections and appetites, the person acquires liberty of spirit. That's great. In which freedom he acquires the 12 fruits of the Holy Spirit: love, joy, peace, goodness, kindness, gentleness, patience, long-suffering, self-control. Moreover, the spiritual person is wonderfully free from his three enemies: the world, the flesh, the devil. When the delights and pleasures of our sense nature are dried up, neither the devil, the world, or the flesh has power over our spirit. There's no interest in it. So this blessed dryness makes a person travel with a detached, unselfish love of God. Now he's not motivated to good works by the pleasure and satisfaction he personally finds in them, but by the desire simply to please God. We do not see a person who is presumptuous or self-satisfied. Instead, there's a holy fear that stands as a guard over one's virtues and increases them. The dryness also dries up the natural passions and appetites in their unrestrained vigor. And during this desert dryness, the person's concern for God and desires to serve him increase. This is very pleasing to God, because it is a disguised way, unknown to the soul, of showing that it loves God. Knowing all this, once the soul has passed through the night of the sense, then our saint is explaining the stanza in which he explained all this. And he talks about the sheer grace of God, where the person has gone through and says, "There, but for the grace of God, I pass through, unseen by his enemies, because God hid what he was doing from Satan and from the person himself." It's like you when you're doing a tapestry. The best side is underneath you. All you see are the knotted ends as you get the needle up, and then you tie an end down again, up again, and all you see are the knotted ends, and that's the yuck side of your tapestry. Then you turn it over, a beautiful masterpiece. So in this night, all you're seeing are the knots. And the Lord is putting the needle through, and he's constructing the image. And then in his time, he'll turn it over and then give you a quick look, and then you'll praise God. Well, I think perhaps I should add this. The four passions, joy, sorrow, hope, and fear, have now been calmed and moderated through constant mortification. We don't say they're in perfect control, because this is only the first purification. The second one will finally do that. Also, the sense appetites have been, as it were, put to sleep. Also, an inner harmony has been reached in our interior senses, namely the imagination, memory, our reasoning mind, through the disuse of meditation involving these faculties. These two are quieted and subject to the Spirit. And so this person can say, "Now my house is still." And I'd like to stop there. Any questions?
Can a person go through the dogmatic senses, if they're meditating, to be constantly hyperactive and your mind is darting all over the place?
about, they may not be suited for it. Not for contemplation. Unless they're healed of that hyperactivity. Now, God can heal it, but this is a mystery of God's ways. Sometimes it's not healed. The person doesn't seek healing. And so we can say that sometimes because of that, the person is not ready for it. Yes?
So when you receive all this, and you're
at that stage where you are accepting and receiving
all the benefits of this, what is expected of you? Is it just a personal thing? Or is it something that you
give to others? Oh, you mean after it's all over?
Well, you're still always in it.
No, not always. It's a state, but then the Lord knows how to temper it. As we just said here, He gives them spiritual sweetness, you know, and it kind of brings them into an oasis. It's like the Sahara Desert, okay? You travel 50 miles, and then you come to an oasis. So you rest there for a while, and then when you're refreshed, back into the desert again. No. God tempers it. So He might let off for a few days or a week. Who knows? In this, there's a no man's land. We must leave that to the Lord. No director, no writer, not even St. John of the Cross can tell you that for this person, it's going to last 7 years and to be finished on January 1st.
So it's a personal feeling, personal state.
Yes.
Individual.
It's particular to each person. And the kind of trials that God is going to take each one through is going to be right where they are. Then here's where God is a master. See, He knows how to use all the circumstances of our life. So He's not going to purify you like He would purify me. First of all, you have a husband, I don't have a wife. I'm not implying that they're going to be such a trial. Could be. No, you cannot give your sanctity away. But you can use it, yes. God will use such a person for others. And in fact, there will be great things done. Yes. But about those trials, in other words, translated into particular detail, it's going to be someone who's going to be a trial to us. Well, aren't there all kinds of people around us that are trials to us? Okay, that's how God purifies us. Again, this great saint says, when we live together like this, we're like a community, like a bag of coins. In a bag, so you shake them up, they rub each other, and the harshness of one personality burnishes another. And if you shake the coins long enough, they're all brand new. That is, you can stand each other. So what will your trials be like? Well, probably the same thing you've gone through all these years, having a migraine headache at times, or somebody that gives it to you. Being impatient, getting a flat tire on the highway, getting a bad cold, having to go to the hospital, having a fire somewhere, or some other disaster. Everything that's life made of, God puts it all together and brings it sometimes to a point where it's not only one thing, but they keep piling up and you say, Lord, when is this going to end? But the Lord knows exactly what to do, and He's not going to tempt us beyond our strength. He's there to support us and so on. So it's going to be nothing unusual in the sense that something you haven't gone through before. It might be just an accumulation of them, though. That might be one after the other, and maybe one for quite a while and so on. See? So, but don't ask the Lord for crosses. That's a height of pride. I know a person that did that. And after a few years, they came and said, I want to be relieved of this. I was foolish. I didn't know what I was asking for. That's different. But not to say, Lord, send me crosses. No. Oh, yes. To accept, that's God's doing. Everything that happens in our life, all things work unto good for those who love God. Yes. Yes, you have your hand up.
Dark night. What happens after that?
Well, after the first purification, then the Lord may have them in a wonderful period of quiet growth and a higher form of prayer, and it may last for some years. Or he may keep them there for the rest of their life, if they're faithful. Maybe they're not ready for the second one. So when will that take place? Well, our saint says that's what's happening in purgatory. Final purification. Oh, I'm not saying that. No, they are interested. But while they're in this trying period, then they don't have this interest. They have to force themselves to pray, so on. But once they're through it, then this comes back. But it's all within moderation. Richard?
Father, while you're in that stage, do you still have the gift of the Holy Spirit?
Oh, you sure do. Very much so. Well, no, the Lord can see to it that it doesn't. Well, you are winning, but you don't know it. See, the spirit is winning, but the body is saying, gee whiz, I'm starving down here. See, the sense part of you, the feeling part of you is not...